and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and thanks for being with us tonight. Tonight I have with us Ed Kane of Body Bio, and we're going to talk about fatty acids, membrane stabilization, and probably some work that he and his wife, Dr. Patricia Kane, do at bodybio.com. It's a great site. If you've never looked at it, take a few minutes and go through and read some of their articles. It's definitely worth your time. So, hello, Mr. Kane. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on my show tonight.
Hello, Eva. Glad to be with you.
I've waited a long time to have you. I'm so pleased that you were able to come on. Why don't you tell us a little bit about you before we get started and where people can find your work, the work of your wife and your company, Body Bio.
Well, I'm CEO of Body Bio, and we manufacture a line of vitamins and minerals. And the most interesting one that we do is one that's made from lecithin, where you can get phospholipids. Oils are very interesting, and they're very much misunderstood in the world today for many reasons. Snake oil started as just plain petroleum, and so there are odd understandings of omega-6 and omega-3, especially about omega-6 as being bad for you. Just to explain a little bit about it, the whole act of sex and reproduction is based on an omega-6. Without omega-6 oils, there is no reproduction. So it's hard for me to understand how something like that got so misunderstood in the marketplace.
So I know one of your most prominent products, and I'm going to let you talk about whatever you want to, but I just kind of want people to know about phosphatidylcholine.
Mm-hmm.
Why can you not just run out and buy a bottle of lecithin?
Well, phosphatidylcholine comes from lecithin, which comes from the production of soybean oil. In the production of soybean oil, there's about 2 or 2.5% of some gooey material that sticks on the machinery after they get done processing the soybeans. And that sticky material they were able to scrape off, and it became very interesting as a nutrient. They've sold it as a health food material for years, but it's mainly used in cosmetics and things like chocolate. It's an emulsifier. So lecithin has a great deal of value because of the phospholipids that it contains. But what the oil companies have done over the years, and it started in the mid-1900s, they mixed that with oil because it will dissolve in oil. But as a phospholipid in oil, it's not accessible to the body. When you eat it, the body breaks it down like it does with all fats. We have developed a process where we package it in capsules and in oil. It's called Body Bio PC. And our PC is dissolved in water. So as a water-soluble item, it becomes utilized in the body as a building block. The building block of a phospholipid is to make membranes, and all cells need a membrane surrounding it before it becomes a cell. It's even the membrane of the organelles within the cell, so that there's a lot of phospholipids that are required to build a cell. So putting in our material into the diet, it actually becomes, goes through the gut, as a liposome because it's soluble in water. And we are water-based, both inside the cell and outside the cell. But the membrane is the protection skin around the cell. So adding new membranes really adds new cells. So that's our Body Bio PC. But the the material that's sold in the marketplace, you can go on Amazon, there's maybe 15 different manufacturers. They're all packed by the oil manufacturers who pack the lecithin in oil. And that does not work.
So I don't know if you where you want to go. We have so many topics that I want to talk about tonight. But do you want to talk about what stabilizing membranes can do for your body?
Well,
or do you want to move directly into your potassium article? Because I also think that's very fascinating. What would
we
you
should
like to do?
A little bit more about lipids. Lipids are extremely valuable. To be able to add more phosphatidylcholine and the other phospholipids into the diet, and it has a tremendous value. It's difficult to talk about some of the technical things because it is technical. Lipid technology is biochemistry, and I lecture to doctors on it quite over 20 years that we've been doing the lectures. Lipids, it's approaching it differently. Lipids come in two varieties, basically. They're either saturated fat, as we all understand saturated fat. Coconut oil is a saturated fat. Lard is a saturated fat. But saturated fats are not bad. In fact, if we go back in the Paleolithic days, as soon as they found created fire, they would in animal products, and they never threw out the oil. If they could catch it in some way, because down the road, as life moved on, that oil that they caught was used to make candles, or it was used to make lard so that they could cook with. So that has been with us for centuries, not just a few hundred years. So oil is extremely valuable, even as a saturated fat. In the body, we have about one-third of our membranes that we analyze is composed of saturated fat. Another third is composed of unsaturated fat. And that's where we get into the omega-6 fats and the omega-3 fats. And the public now is much more knowledgeable about omega-3 because of the fish oil. And fish oils are good for you, but we don't generally use too much of them, and they have been overblown. And what fish oils do, they will suppress the omega-6s. There's a competitive characteristic to the oils in the body. And most of the oils in the body are omega-6, the polyunsaturated versions.
So if you take fish oil, which most people out there do, and you get the balance uneven, more omega-3s than omega-6s, And let me just say this, too. Mr. Cain is not a physician, and neither one of us are attempting to treat or diagnose you. Anything that we say on this radio show is for informational purposes only. You must go and see your own physician, your own health care provider, to get your personal health cared for. So I just want to say that. So, but should someone get those balances out of ratio, what kind of symptoms might they expect to see?
Well, the loss of what happens is the omega-3s will suppress the omega-6s, and the omega-6s are the principal fat in the body, the principal polyunsaturated fat. The deficiencies are not readily understood, but you lose your function. If you lose your function of omega-6, you lose control of, for one thing, the cholesterol. It's the balance of fats that is most desirable if you put the right ones in. And one of the professor that we follow is Shlomo Yehuda out of Israel. He created the 4-to-1 ratio of omega-6 to omega-3. That's an 80% omega-6 to 20% omega-3. So it shows you that the omega-6 are much more involved in the structure of the body and the growth of the body. But the omega-3
Let me just ask a question. I didn't quite understand it. So if you have too much omega-3s, then you lose your cholesterol. Is that what you said?
No, you lose your control of omega-6s, which tend to control the levels of cholesterol.
Okay.
It's a question of, because cholesterol is a saturated fat in the body and extremely valuable because it's the basis of sex hormones and bile. And cholesterol is a very interesting subject because cholesterol has been beat up over the years by just naming it as bad, and cholesterol certainly is not bad. It's an extremely valuable fat.
That's very interesting. So if it's out of balance, will they have, I'm looking at this article, let me see what's the name of this article, the remarkable 4-to-1 fatty acid ratio and the brain. It says that they might have things such as schizophrenia, gastrointestinal problems, dry skin, mucus colitis. Those are all things that sometimes people can't figure out why it's happening. So that might be a place to look?
Well, all signals...
Did you take a lot of fish oil?
Fish oil, no, fish oil is very valuable for the brain because that 80-20 ratio, the 4-to-1 ratio, doesn't pertain to the brain. The brain has a lot more omega-3s, the high order of omega-3s, the EPA and DHA, but that's getting a little bit technical. But
okay.
The brain works, there's much more omega-3s in the brain, there's much more omega-6s in the body.
Okay, that's interesting. So let's talk a little bit about your potassium article that you sent me. I thought that was really fascinating. And it made so much sense to me with issues that I myself have, especially about that nose thing. So I'll let you talk about that.
Okay, I'm doing a paper right now and studying, and the best way to study the two main electrolytes, sodium and potassium, is to look at the heart, because sodium and potassium are major electrolytes in the body. Sodium is much higher in the bloodstream than potassium, and potassium is much higher in the cell than sodium. And there is an enzyme called sodium-potassium pump. That pump is highly represented all throughout the body in the cells. They're in the cells that are facing the bloodstream. And what the pump does, the sodium-potassium pump, it picks up three sodium ions from inside the cell, dumps them out into the bloodstream, picks up two potassium ions from the bloodstream, and dumps it back into the cell. So they keep doing that, and that's a 24/7 round-the-clock function for those sodium-potassium pumps. What the sodium-potassium pumps do by taking as much sodium as they can and dumping it into the bloodstream, and as much potassium out of the bloodstream, dumping it into the cell, you create what is termed membrane potential, because in all phases of one excess over the other, they tend to normalize if given half the chance. So the heartbeat is actually initiated by the sodium ion channels opening up, and the excess sodium in the bloodstream rushes into the heart cell, and what they call hyper terminology. And that sodium, when it rushes into the heart cell, sodium is an astringent. And as an astringent, it tends to shrink things. Potassium, on the other hand, is a relaxing agent. It tends to normalize things. And what we call moving the cell back to a resting state. So every time the heart cell pumps, it beats, the sodium channel opens up, sodium rushes in, And there's, that heart cell, the myocyte, shrinks just a little bit. And now you have 2 billion myocytes all shrinking at the same time in unison. That's the heart pump. That's the heartbeat. And it is a miraculous event. Now, that cell, each myocyte, has to be reset because there's the next pump coming right around the corner. And it does that through the sodium-potassium pumps. They take the 3 sodium ions out, dump it in the bloodstream, the 2 potassium ions back out on the return trip and dump it in the cell. So they go on 24/7 setting up the resting state so that the cell can then open the sodium ions and do the whole exercise again. Marvelous exercise, but the function that fails over time is there's not enough potassium in the bloodstream coming from the gut, from digestion of foods. It's not high enough to keep those ion channels or the sodium-potassium pump to pick up the 2 potassium ions and dump them back into the cell. Oftentimes, over time, you lose that ability because there's no potassium, not enough potassium in the system to feed the resting state that must occur before the cell can do it again. So that leads to higher blood pressure. So the literature is rife with the fact that low potassium means over time a higher blood pressure. And that's why blood pressure rises, because the cell can't reset itself.
So does that, for the people who aren't technical that are listening, does that why people, well, one reason why some people get edema, because they're too much sodium for how much potassium?
I don't have that as a function of edema. Edema, I would move you over more to the fatty acids and get those missing elements, the 4-to-1 ratio, back into the system as a control of edema.
Interesting.
Yeah, that would be more the control of the cell membrane and what goes on the cell membrane and in the cell membrane.
If you have edema that you don't necessarily look to electrolytes, but to your membrane stabilization, that's interesting. Is that what you're saying?
Well, an indication for, an indication for the electrolytes being out of order, let's say, is muscle cramps.
Uh-huh.
Even a cough is an irritation in the trachea that would that initiates a cough. It's almost like a cramp in the trachea.
Interesting. So, and I was looking, when I was reading that article, you talked about how to test just a little self-body test to see if you need it. But then you mentioned also about how different parts of your body might be deficient in potassium, such as your trachea. So does that mean go ahead and tell about the nose, and then I'll ask my question about that. I thought that was so interesting.
Potassium is predominantly on the right side of the body, and sodium is predominant on the left side. Body is split vertically, and the organs and the muscle groups, and you think of terms in the body. There's a lot of tubes in the body. There's a trachea tube that allows us to breathe in and out. There's a gut tube that allows us to intake food, and the food goes through the stomach all through the intestines as a big tube coming out the rear end. So even the veins and the arteries are all structured in tubes. All of them are affected by potassium and sodium. Remember, sodium is an astringent. It shrinks things. Potassium is a relaxer. It relaxes things. So a relaxed vein is much more fluid for the material to go through than a shrunken or a shrinking vein. Even the urine stream it comes out from a tube. And all of those are affected by the electrolytes in the same way. The difference between the right side and the left side is that potassium on the right side, if it's deficient, your tubes in your nasal structure become tighter. So often you will get a stuffy right side nose. And if that nose is stuffy on the right side, that means at that moment in time, your potassium level is too low. And if you eat more vegetables, which are high in potassium, like potatoes, we're not pleased about bananas or that whole banana thing because it's too much fructose, too much sugar. It's much more potatoes and vegetables, and especially potatoes. But there are nutrients on the market that you can use. Nutrients, however, coming to the gut, it's a little bit different. The potassium is very, very efficient about throwing it away. Aldosterone from the kidneys will pick up potassium coming through the gut very quickly and toss it into the kidneys, and you urinate away. So you don't get the value of it. So potassium needs a little bit of a study, but generally you can use, we put out a nutrient called Rescue, and that can be helpful for low potassium levels. The beauty part of it all is that you can test yourself just by breathing, and if you have a stuffy nose, that's a low potassium level.
So I'm curious, if you have, like, I notice that I do that right stuffy nose. I mean, I did, and as soon as you read it, it just made so much sense. But I also noticed that I get a cramp on the right side of my neck. So is when you get things that happen on your right side cramp-wise, is that typically what it'll probably mean?
Generally, yes. If they occur on the right side, that has a tendency to be a potassium deficiency. On the left side, it would tend to be a sodium deficiency. But sodium deficiency is not common because our food manufacturers sprinkle everything that we buy in the marketplace with too much sodium. But potassium is very high in foods, in vegetables. There isn't a farmer in the world that doesn't use NPK. N is nitrogen, P is phosphorus, K is potassium. So NPK, they sprinkle on as a fertilizer on everything that's manufactured. So
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Also, we have done that for over 15 years, a very interesting product called Elite. And Elite is a high potassium electrolyte. In fact, our marathon runners, we have a number of them using that because one of the things that marathon runners do, they shouldn't be running 26 miles anyway, but they do it and they love it. But what they do over a long distance is run out of potassium. So I have them drinking an extra amount of potassium right before they run the gates, you know, through the starting gate. And I have them putting it in, say, between 5 and 10 minutes before they shoot the gun for their run test. What happens when you run, any physical effort, strong physical effort, it sequesters the liquids. Nothing goes into they save the liquids, doesn't go into the bladder. So at that point, they have trapped our Elite, which is a high potassium electrolyte, which has both sodium and potassium, just higher in potassium. The body will trap that, and they have access to it for the rest of the race, or most of the rest of the race. It doesn't really last 26 miles. They can't get that enough in. But it does avoid the difficult in walking. A lot of runners, when they get done, can't even fold themselves up in a car just to drive home.
I love that stuff. Whenever I use it every single day of my life, and it always makes me have more energy. If I'm fatigued and I use that stuff, I immediately feel better.
Yeah, well, you're raising the potassium level. Anytime, as soon as you do that, if you can, especially with our Elite, you can do it, or the Rescue will do it. You will feel better as soon as you raise that the potassium level.
Is that
You're moving the whole society, your whole structure back to a resting state.
Well, it really does make, and it seems to make a significant difference when I sleep too. And it also makes a difference as to how many times I have to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
When I don't do it, I have to go to the bathroom 1,000 times a day. But when I do it,
yeah, you're relaxing.
I only have,
the tube
yeah.
structure in the body, even your urinating tube relaxes, and you can urinate. You know, the stream is thicker. Or.
Yeah, it makes a significant difference. It doesn't just kind of start and stop.
Right.
That's not the right word either. It all comes out. I don't
yeah.
know how to say it, at one time rather than having to go 50 times. So it makes me have a better sleep at night, which is
the
a significant thing to me.
Sodium and potassium structure really is the basis of the heart pump. Separating those two in the cell and in the bloodstream permits, you know, all animal metabolism to have a heart, to have the myocytes bring in the sodium, shrink it, get the pump, and then structure and wait for that brief moment and have it reset and do it again and again and again. It is the heart pump is an absolute marvel in biochemistry.
So I wonder, would you like to talk about, I remember several years ago I had a heart attack and I started using the PC and that's when I found these electrolytes, that's when I found you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it radically changed my life for the good. And so, but back when all that was happening, I read this amazing article, and I don't remember where it came from, if it was from you guys, but it happened about that time, about using phosphatidylcholine and keeping heart, if a certain portion in the heart got injured, and using those and keeping them beating in synchrony with the other heart cells. Did I get that from you guys?
You may have.
I just thought that was so profound.
Yeah, in my lecture, I quote a scientist and a professor from, it's from University of Illinois, Irvine, and Umaro is his name. And he did a marvelous study where he was searching for, he was analyzing the phosphatidylcholine in the membrane and was concerned about heart attacks and concerned about the agglomeration of calcium that blocks the vein and blocks the artery. And what he did was so fascinating. He analyzed the umbilical cord of the tissues, not the blood, but he analyzed the tissues of the umbilical cord, and he came up and said that there is phosphatidylcholine also has a sort of cousin, we'll call it, and the cousin is sphingomyelin. Sphingomyelin goes to make up myelin in the brain, which is extremely valuable. But too much sphingomyelin, it becomes a hindrance as we age. Because sphingomyelin, which has a choline head, and phosphatidylcholine has a choline head, both of them, the umbilical cord had 10% of the umbilical cord compared to 40%, 10% sphingomyelin compared to 40% phosphatidylcholine. These were two cousins that have a choline head group, but sphingomyelin will attract calcium. Phosphatidylcholine will reject calcium. So he proved that in his studies, as that ratio moves and sphingomyelin gets higher, and it does with many of us as we age, we have a chance for having a valve in artery atherosclerosis is an artery vein, a valve that gets clogged up and blocked. So the attraction of calcium is part of that, because calcium is B becomes a crystal and a hard substance. Keeping phosphatidylcholine higher works against that, which describes more or less the value of our phosphatidylcholine in the body by OPC.
So basically what that, I'm just, for the people who aren't technical, it can reverse plaque? Is that what you're saying, according to that doctor's study?
He doesn't go that far. Kumaro just says that what happens over time is that the excess of sphingomyelin becomes difficult to handle and is probably one of the basic base structures of atherosclerosis with age.
Okay. I think that's very interesting. Okay, let's see. Where would you like to go next? I can ask a million questions, but I'd like for you to go where you would like to go.
Well, I think the 4-to-1 oil ratio is a fascinating history.
I do too. Go there then. I love that.
Yehuda is a professor of Elan University in Haifa, and he's in the head of psychology. And he has been studying the omega-3s and the omega-6s for a good bit of his time. He worked, he got his PhD at MIT, and he worked under Workman I think he taught because he was there for about 7 years. But he did become an excellent researcher. Different universities have different talents as far as the quality of their research, and MIT ranks very high in that. But he went back to Israel, and he teaches in Haifa. And he originally, what he was after was what affects, you know, certainly the brain, because the brain is high in polyunsaturated fat. So they worked with soybean oil originally, and they found what they were trying to do was polyunsaturated fat. The higher the polyunsaturation, the higher the fluidity in the body. The more unsaturated, the lower the unsaturation, or rigid. So I do that in my lectures, describing saturated fat by itself is basically a candle. It's wax, whereas unsaturated fat is runny. It's fluid, highly fluid. So we need the saturated fat for many of the functions within the body, and we need the unsaturated fat, and that blend serves a marvelous structure where we have both. Saturated fat actually becomes the protection in the body. Unsaturated fat is the fluidity. So in Yehuda's work, he used soybean oil and safflower sunflower. Those were the separate parts. And the soybean oil had 7% omega-3s. Now, this is not fish oil omega-3. This is the lower level of omega-3s, the beginning level. He was after, what's the ratio of the beginning level between the omega-6s and the omega-3s? Their philosophy that they went down at that point, if we have more fluidity in the brain, in the body, that will give us a better performance. But it didn't work on its previous test. And then in 1993, he published a test which he used various ratios, omega-3 and omega-6. And what he found out that the best ratio was 4 parts of omega-6 to 1 part of omega-3. This is not fish oil. This is the lower level of omega-3. And so it was linoleic acid for the omega-6, and that has two double bonds, and linolenic acid, which we use a lot in flax oil or hemp seed oil, that has three double bonds. So it's the ratio between the two double bonds, which was linolenic. That linoleic is high in sunflower and soybean and safflower oil. The high linolenic, the omega-3, is high in flax oil and hemp seed and walnuts. So
when using these oils, are you're not talking? I don't want to put words in your mouth. Are you talking about just taking the oils in a spoon, or is it okay for people to cook with them?
You can't cook with polyunsaturated, or shouldn't, polyunsaturated fat. You should stay on the solid side, on the palmitic side, and that was either coconut butter is a good one, or lard. Nobody uses lard, but lard happens to be okay. But butter and coconut oil are probably the best for cooking. You can use olive. Olive is high in monounsaturated. That's only one unsaturation, where linoleic, the omega-6s, start with two unsaturations.
So does it matter about temperature when you use either of those three? Can you cook on whatever temperature you want, or do you keep it low?
That's a good question, because you should not raise the temperature of polyunsaturated. The more unsaturation you have, the more subject to rancid, characteristics. And rancidity we don't like. In fact, rancidity is somewhat toxic, and that's we're learning that only today. It's just too much heat on the oil, even in the production of the oil, when they press the seeds, is a difficult area. I mean, we have just too much of it. Years ago, they moved away from coconut butter, coconut oil, to make French fries. Well, coconut butter would be much better than French fries because it's saturated fat. So it's more stable as a cooking oil than the polyunsaturated fat, because the unsaturation gets rancid quicker, and much quicker. So, but they wound up in the French fries and, in the fast foods worldwide. And even in just normal restaurants that serve French fries, generally they're polyunsaturated oil, corn oil, or...
So can you tell us, I'm looking back at Yehuda's research, I kind of get distracted because you guys do so much interesting work. What can you tell us about demyelination? Restoring your myelin sheaths. Do you know anything about that?
We use the 4-to-1 ratio for that, and we do get better results, but we really don't understand the myelination process. We use Body Bio PC for MS, and we use the 4-to-1 oil, but I can't really say
that's
that
okay.
we have a good understanding. Not cracked the myelin problem, yet the patients do get better.
What about immune issues?
I would rather not go in.
Okay, that's all right. No problem.
And we get into the brain. It's fascinating because all the signals in the brain are driven on the membrane itself. So anything we do for the membrane seems to affect or help the signals coming from the brain or to the brain. In our houses and industry, we run it through a copper wire with the insulation around the outside. For us, we run right on the membrane itself.
Could you tell the people that don't know, tell us what the membrane does and why it's so important to take care of that membrane.
Membrane has approximately a third of the membrane is saturated, and a third of it is unsaturated, and another third is cholesterol. So it's almost 60 to 65% saturated because cholesterol is, and it's only one-third unsaturated. But that's enough to provide the fluidity that we need in the membrane. The membrane is, the oil comes in two varieties, either a triglyceride, as we know, which becomes storage fat used for later, or phospholipids. The phospholipids is, like phosphatidylcholine, is a phospholipid. And that has two lipid tails. Triglycerides has three lipid tails. That's it. There's only two varieties, one with two tails, one with three tails. Now, the character of those tails are extremely important because if we have sufficient polyunsaturated fat, we're far healthier than we have if we have a lot of saturated fat, because the saturated fat can become part of the two lipid tails just as well as the unsaturated. So balancing that out has always been our target. The 4-to-1 ratio is a perfect way to balance the ratio of what kind of polyunsaturated fat we put into the system. If we get the 4-to-1 ratio and build that up, we tend to move people much healthier as far as they age, or even to conquer diseases. So,
so if you have too much omega-3s, what's the best thing to do to get them back down? Do you just, would the best thing to be do like some, like the Body Bio oil that has the 4-to-1 ratio built in and stop doing plain omega-3s? Understanding that this is just a conversation. It's not attempting to treat or diagnose anybody, just a conversation.
Generally, with everybody focusing on omega-3, people will tend to take more omega-3. That this is the fish oil variety, which is this is above the 4-to-1 ratio of omega-3. So the 4-to-1 ratio pertains to linoleic and linolenic. Linoleic is the omega-6, linoleic is the omega-3, and that's the flax oil version. And that is with three double bonds. Before you get into the fish oil version, there are five and six double bonds in that. So, and that goes into the brain, basically the six double bond. That's a very, very highly active lipid, and which... So the fish oils feed into that, so they do have a very, very good level, very good function. But like all things, if too much media gets into the act, there's too much consumption. So as the consumption of the fish oil goes up, the omega-6s go down. So the omega-6s, where we want a 4-to-1 ratio, 80% of omega-6 and 20% of omega-3, we lose out in that with too much fish oil. So what we have always done, we take them off of fish oil and give them like one or two capsules a week. So that became our sort of go down rather than...
That makes sense then. So you would take like the Body Bio... And that's
you could use
sunflower flax. You'd just do that every day instead.
You can also, hemp seed oil is 3.8-to-1. So hemp seed just, and that's available in the market, or the Body Bio oil, which we hold very tightly to the 4-to-1. Both of them will do the job. So you can balance that out, but the idea is that you move towards that ratio if you can. You do a little math, you can just read on the back label and do some mathematics, mm-hmm. and you can buy flax oil and sunflower or safflower, or you can buy our 4-to-1 oil.
Okay, that makes perfect sense to me now. I better understand that. Where do you want to go next? Do you want to talk at all about heavy metals? We have, let's see, we got about 12 minutes or so.
Okay.
What would you like to talk about next?
Well, we can talk about heavy metals because we love that subject.
Yeah.
Just like the heavy metals, but and we have an answer for it. What we produce is a group of vegetables that a group of minerals that help with the heavy metal toxic structure that is so prevalent. We have found over the years that if you take a lot of the ones you need, it will suppress the ones you're trying to get rid of. And we do not understand why. We don't know why they get dumped, but the body will throw them away in preference to the good ones. And the good ones are like magnesium, zinc, molybdenum, copper, and potassium, and potassium.
So, how do you know which ones that you need?
Well, we use a taste test. It's similar to the nose test, but it's not quite. What we do is you get a group of nine, one, you know, potassium, zinc, magnesium.
They all come together in your box, right? Don't you sell them in, like, together so you don't have to guess?
Right. And you taste test each one, and it's extremely simple. If you like it, you need it. If you don't like it, don't take it. It's that easy. I mean, it's certainly the grazing animals do that constantly. They'll chew on a grass and spit it right out if it doesn't taste good and go to the next one. What we do, we thank them for having done so much analysis, you know, as they have been grazed all their life before we chew on them. But we've gone away. I'm sure that we used that in our evolutionary age to get here. There's no way we would have arrived without using our taste buds to know exactly what we should eat and what not to eat.
Certainly, it seems like the body's binary way of telling you what you need. So you have these little bottles.
You have these little bottles, and we have a test kit, and you can test each one. And then when you know the ones you need, you take just those. If you like them, you take them. And if the ones you don't like, you leave away. If you have too much, generally, if you have too much of a mineral, the body will reject it. So if you stay with the ones you like, you can add as much as you want in of those, but you must test yourself periodically to see how you're doing, because the ones you avoid will start to shift in the body where you didn't want them before. Now the other ones, as you bring the ones that you really want up, the other ones will come back. So, and then you have to be interested enough to do it. But if you do it, it's a marvel. It's an absolute marvel to get all the minerals that you need, the trace minerals, and you can do it on a constant basis.
So I'd imagine it would be important that you did that probably at least weekly to monitor how they're shifting.
No, actually, you can do it biweekly, every 2 weeks. You don't. You won't be nailed to it, but you have to be persistent if you're taking the ones you like. As you take more of the ones you like, you need them less and less. If you follow the logic, if you're putting only those ones in that you were missing, pretty soon you don't miss them as much. You don't need it quite as much as you know. So it's a fascinating concept. It actually works. We have doctors that wanted to get rid of mercury. We're able to dump the mercury with our liquid minerals where they could not dump it with any other method.
Now, how long does it get? Just pick a case and say somebody.
That's a tough one, Eva. I don't think we have a handle on the speed, because each person is different.
Would it be years or?
Oh no! No, what happens as soon as you start taking the ones you need, you will change. It will affect the change, and I have no way of knowing what that change would be. But you're putting pieces back. The only way I describe it, generally, we're run by genetics, and the system is trying to make whatever peptide it needs. There's 22, 24,000 peptides that every cell has the ability to make, and it's according to any given moment in time, is putting out a signal that let's make some of these or let's mm-hmm. make some of those. So as the signal comes into the DNA to produce it, most of the peptides have a mineral that's associated with within its structure. If you look at the biochemistry chart, you'll see manganese here, or you'll see chromium over here for another peptide. Just imagine if you're short of chromium, you'll always have some. So some of the cells will be able to produce it, but you won't be able to produce as much of that particular peptide that the body needs or the cell needs at that moment. Once you start putting them back in, all of a sudden, that there's enough of that chromium or manganese or copper all throughout the system that you were missing. Now you're producing peptides that the body was missing for a long time in some cells, not all. It's a chaos type of structure. But you get a picture of a peptide that was called for in a cell, and it was produced in the ER, but they put the peptide together with all the amino acids that it required, and they didn't have chromium. That peptide has to be torn apart, thrown away, so it becomes debris. So without minerals, all that you need all the time, there's a lot of debris or excess debris that you now have to get rid of. So part of that becomes slightly toxic. And we don't understand everything.
Okay. That makes perfect. That makes a lot of sense. I've never thought about it that way. So do you have, let me see how much time we got, maybe 6 or 7 minutes. Do you have this information anywhere that people can read about it, all these things that you've talked about tonight?
You can go on Body Bio website, bodybio.com. And I have three videos that I spoke about the minerals. The third one is how to take them. First two are my experiences. It took me 2.5 years at a very high dose of what I needed before I was able to bring all my level up. 2.5 years. It wasn't an overnight. It was a long journey for me at that time. So it was a fascinating trip, and I've kept my minerals up pretty much. If I take a trip and go away for a week or 2 weeks, which we just did recently, I don't bother taking them because I can always catch up when I get home, you know, without any difficulty. But
now, and don't take this the wrong way, but you're how old?
I'm 89.
And you are still going strong. So all these things obviously must make a positive difference in your life. Because not very many 89-year-olds can do all the things that you do, so it's an amazing thing. I want to be like you when I'm 89 years old.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So we
can exchange all the good stuff for you.
Do what?
I say stay close to us so we can exchange all these.
You better believe it. I mean, Patricia, yeah. Dr. Kane was so, I can't tell you how much she helped my life.
Mm.
I thank you both, really, really I do. I mean, I still have a whole counter full of her stuff, the Body Bio stuff that I take every day, and I recommend it all the time. So do you have a place where you keep articles that about all the stuff that people can look at?
There are articles. I would type in phosphatidylcholine if you can put all the letters together to make it. But if you can, either BodyBioPC will take you to those, or phosphatidylcholine will take you to those in our website.
Okay. Now, what about a website for your body bio? I mean, don't you have a place where you have a lot of fascinating articles?
Yeah, in the website.
Like I've seen some.
There's a gang of, there's a lot of good articles that we have. I have, my bulletins are there. When you go in, just a second, let me, while we're talking, look right on it and see.
There's numerous articles, I mean, that are really fascinating on your page.
Click on health. Click on health practitioners on our website. It's a heading right at the top.
And what's your website?
It's bodybio.com.
And then click on the tab that says health professionals.
Click on the top. It says health practitioners.
Oh, practitioners. Okay.
And that'll take you into all the articles.
And you have, you sell stuff, don't you, on your website that people can order? Testing and supplements and things like that?
Yeah, for the minerals, listen to the videos that I have. I get a lot of good, a lot of good doctors that love it, and they use it for their patients. You can click on liquid minerals. Liquid minerals, and click on any one of them, and you'll go into the to those. You can click on phosphatidylcholine as well, and the body bio balanced oil as well. Go into health professionals. I'm sorry, I said practitioners. It's health professionals, and that will take you into some of the longer bulletins as well.
Excellent. I know they're really good. I read them all the time. They're wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Mr. Kane, for coming on my show tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so thrilled to have you. I've waited a long time to get you. I'd love to have Patricia or Dr. Kane sometime. If she ever wants to come, I would love to have her. Thank you for everything. I mean, I'd just love to have you.
Okay.
And thank you for everything that you've done for me, which has been quite a bit.
Thank you, Eva. Pleasure to be with you.
Have a good one. Take
care.
Good night.
Bye-bye.